time to time. I know about 25 years ago, I memorized it all. And I used to, every couple weeks, you know, remember that I could memorize it. But then I got real busy and quit repeating it, and so now I don't remember it. But it was very helpful at the time, you know. And I also find if you're really interested in learning something, you know, if you read, especially this one, there's so many different commentaries. If you read them all, you can kind of come up with your own translation and your own version of it, and so that makes sense to you when you read sort of all the different people. And that's if you're really into it, you can do that. And the other thing I didn't mention is that in like Trungpas and in the Nyingmas, they have the ultimate bodhicitta first. Did you notice that? They have training in ultimate bodhicitta first. And I almost did it this way, but we are a Gelupa center. And so when Lama Tsongkhapa taught it, he thought it was more important to develop bodhicitta first and then talk about emptiness. But of course, we've been doing emptiness every day here anyway, so when we get to that, we'll probably do that maybe tonight. And then tomorrow morning we'll do 3 and 4, and the afternoon we'll do, start on the rest and finish Monday morning. So, but anyway, right now we're talking about, what did we decide? We don't have to gather all blame into one. Let's think of a different way of saying that, you know. Let's say that, you know, well, the main point that Lama Zopa Rinpoche says is that, know that, you know, I'm responsible for what happens to me. It's nobody else. So maybe that's the way you think about it. You know, I am responsible for my... And not even I, really. You know, it's just my karma, really, is what's responsible for what happens to me. That's really what this, to me, is what this is saying, you know. Because, you know, it's not really me, because that's the me of this life. And so most of what we experience is karmas from past life ripening, you know. What do you see?
Something's caught in a web. I can hear it.
I can hear it buzzing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
quite high up.
Oh.
Is anyone flying? Is there a broom handle?
I hate it when they get in there. Do you mind if I just go and get some?
No, but if you can find it, I'm not sure which
it's
one.
It's in the top corner.
It's on the right side.
Oh, okay.
My food
you might be able to read. You're tall. You might be able to stand on the chair.
Yes,
and just
no, you're taking food away from other creatures.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they'll eat somebody else, you know.
I found a bit of wood.
Yeah.
If you don't...
Sorry, interrupting you.
That is an interesting thing, you know, about...
Is the spider there?
Taking the food away from somebody else, you know.
Yeah.
Come on, darling.
Rinpoche always rescues them, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
I suppose it's the karma of this, as we're talking about karma.
And he takes them around
it's
the stupa, too.
It's this little
too.
Karma. Oh, yeah.
Take
it around the stupa.
Yeah.
They're
around
the stupa. Yeah. So, let's see, what did we say then?
Yeah.
But the karma's, my past karmas are what's responsible for what happens to me, you know? Instead of pointing a finger. There's no reason to point a finger, you know, at anybody. And of course, Shantideva talks a lot about that in his chapter on patience, you know. So, and karma. But does anyone have any more they want to say about that, or any question about that, or how we go about working with that? Yeah.
I'm a bit worried that I've got like a pop culture understanding of karma.
Yeah.
And not a very deep one. Because when you mentioned that last night, my kind of brain went in terms of just thinking about, say, people with disabilities and how that kind of idea that they sort of earned that disability feels a bit unethical or just kind of worried me a little bit. I did wait for thinking about it.
Yeah, well, it's not that they earn it.
Yeah.
But I know that there's this horrible thing that people do to other people when something bad happens to them. You can say, oh, that's your karma, you know.
Yeah.
It's terrible when people use it.
So.
It's totally abusive when people do that, particularly if they're the one that hurt you. I mean, that used to happen to me all the time, you know. Some someone would, you know, like be mean and say, well, it's just your karma. It's terrible. It's an abuse. It's an abusive way of, it's an abuse of Dharma ideas, you know. But I think that's why I'm trying, it's what you're talking about is the same idea of trying to, of making that translation, not putting the blame. Like there's no, it's not the, it's not that anybody's bad. You know, and there's so much language in our Western Dharma, you know, like negative karma and good karma. And I don't even say that anymore. I call it mistaken karma. Because, you know, most people don't do things on purpose negatively. It's just uncontrolled activities that's ripening from past karmas, isn't it?
An unskillful thing.
Yeah.
Looking at.
Yeah, it's just an unskillful way of behaving.
Yeah.
In the same way, I love the way, you know, I said that this morning, you know, Marshall Rosenberg says that whenever anybody harms us, we have to remember they're just looking for happiness, but in a very unskillful way. You know? They don't understand that, you know, they're happiness is causing other people suffering. And I mean, and that's what's happening all over the place. In the same way as just that spider and the fly. The spider's just trying to eat.
Yeah.
So the spider's not thinking, oh, I'm being mean to this fly. The spider's just eating. You know? And I think that's one of the kind of reasons to want to get out of samsara. You know, is because no matter where we are in the six realms of samsara, we can't help but harm other beings. I mean, just eating. There's no way we can eat without causing harm. You know? I mean, how many insects get killed in a head of lettuce? You know? I mean, that's why in some ways the argument about not eating meat is a bit, you know, shady because...
Athena brought that up at the last retreat that she did here.
Yeah.
And some people got upset about
yeah.
it. Really, really upset.
Yeah.
When she
but,
said that.
Yeah, but if you think about it.
She was right.
Yeah, I mean.
Didn't like it.
We identify with mammals and big animals because they're cuddly
yeah,
and sweet and we like
yeah.
them and everything, but a cow's life is just as precious as a fly's life
yeah.
or even a flea's life. And if you've ever been around insects, they care about their lives. They run away from harm. They aren't stupid. They have minds. You know, so if you really thought about it, you know, to eat a cow, you're actually killing less beings than eating a head of lettuce. But you know.
And what about bacteria? They're causing infections, so you
yeah.
go and get some antibiotics.
Yeah. And the question is, do bacteria have mind? Are bacteria sentient beings?
Lucia said no.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting one because I remember. Rabina had a discussion about the trees and, you know, are not being sentient beings as well. And so then, where is this, where do you kind of...
Well, according...
Where do this start?
According to the Dalai Lama, sentient beings are ones that can propel themselves. They can walk, they can move.
And have consciousness.
However, there are a lot of spirits that live in trees.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we feel in trees is the beings that abide in the tree. But then that's also Buddhist cosmology and other, you know, other cosmologies.
Shamanic beings,
you know, spiritual traditions
yeah.
think trees are sentient. Some people think the earth is sentient.
The rocks.
Yeah, and what?
And the rocks.
And the, you know, I mean, and so... You know, that happens to be a Buddhist standpoint, but I don't know if that's right or not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is we're supposed to, believe that Buddha was all omniscient and everything. He says 100% correct, but also the other argument is Buddha said what was appropriate to the people at the time,
yeah.
you know, about Mount Meru and the four continents. So, you know, I'll just leave that up to you. If you think trees have spirit, you know, sentient beings, you know, I mean... Sometimes it makes a lot of sense to me to think that the earth could be a sentient being, you know?
But there is respect for the environment. That forms part of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a lot of areas where they only burn wood that's fallen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't actually touch the green wood.
Yeah.
Because that is...
It's sacred.
Well, not only sacred, but it's actually for future generations.
Yeah.
Because if
yeah.
you chop down a tree, it takes
yeah.
you know, 100 years to grow back to where it was.
That's right.
So it's you know, everyone has their different perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, even in the Buddha's teaching, he said, don't take what I say
exactly
in absolute faith.
That's
question
right.
It.
Question it.
Go, you know, decide which way you
yeah.
want to interpret it.
Yeah, and I know His Holiness says to Western people, first of all, He'll say, don't leave your own religion if it's not comfortable. And the second thing He says is just take what works for you. You don't have to become a fundamentalist Buddhist to use, especially these kind of techniques. They're so helpful, you know. But back to the thing about karma, I think the thing to think about, you know, people who are born with disabilities, somewhere in all of their different lifetimes, something happened to create that cause.
Yeah.
But it's not that they're bad or it was a bad thing, but just something happened, you know. It could have been that they were in the army and they had to, you know, they cut off somebody's legs or something, you know. And what can we say? But it's not to think that, you know, they are personally responsible for that, you know. I mean, we're only personally responsible for what we do this life, you know. And even so, as children, we're not really responsible for what we did as children. We didn't know better. It's just as we become more and more conscious and more aware. And so I think that's the compassion has to be there with the understanding of karma. But definitely, I mean, karma is the law of the universe, and you can see it in everything else besides human beings, so why wouldn't it work for mind, you know? I don't know what else you want to say about that other than, I mean, it is sad that these things happened. And it would be great if everyone was born with a perfect human rebirth, but, you know, I mean, it's just as equally sad that people are born in parts of the world where there's not enough to eat, you know?
And sometimes, you know, I met the spina bifida.
Yeah.
You know, taking the drug for morning sickness.
Yeah.
I happened to be at a place, I think it was about 16, 17. And it was a place for wheelchair users, so they could camp out and go around the woods and whatever they wanted. And the person was showing us around, and this teenage girl in a wheelchair came along, and she basically had flippers on both hands and no legs.
Mm-hmm.
But the force of energy that came from her was quite incredible.
Mm-hmm.
She was totally 100% alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I think the Western culture is always blame or something external.
I think Tibetans too, you know.
It's a very easy route to take.
Yeah, we really, I think that's one of the greatest things we can do for ourselves is kind of just try to remove guilt and blame and shame from our vocabulary and from our mind, because it just doesn't serve, it's not caring, you know.
There's something around...
When first you, Lise, and then Carl.
Okay, there's something around pity as well. I work with Aboriginal people in Australia, and their approach to people with a disability is quite different, because how they see identity is completely through a web of relationships around family, and they know exactly who's related to who and how, and this person's second cousin. There's a very complex social system around that manages genetics, but also spiritual knowledge, oral tradition. It's so rich.
Well,
I mean,
that's nice to hear about more of it.
I know about this much, but the upshot of that is that, you know, someone, it's always your sense of identity, your sense of connection to someone else is always about that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, someone who, it seems to me from my perspective and from how people talk about it, is first and foremost that person is, you know, my cousin, brother or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Of course there's also a disability there, but the relationship is the foremost thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly when I started realizing that, it made me reflect on how much in our culture it's first of all the disability, it's not the person. Just made me think about some of the assumptions we have around that, and about not actually being able to see beyond it to the person who is living their life however they're living it, you know.
We're so much more taken by appearances rather than by heart, isn't it? Where they connect with the heart.
Yeah.
Mm.
I just wonder what it would be like for someone with a really difficult disability to manage to be told that somewhere along the lines you caused this that you are living with and managing. I don't know, it could be quite a crushing thing.
But surely that wouldn't happen unless they discovered the Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would understand the fact that karma is cause, is the word cause, it's not just the result, it's the cause.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear what Carl has to say.
No. I'm thinking of a client of mine who was a survivor of horrendous ritual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And part of her explanation was that she was atoning for being an abuser in the past life. So it's a very.
And she was okay with that?
No.
No.
No, absolutely not. Far from it.
Yeah.
But then again, which of her you spoke to, because there were a cast of thousands in there. Really serious dissociative identity disorder. She firmly believed that. She wasn't comfortable with it.
Mm.
And comes from a very kind of shallow understanding of karma,
mm-hmm.
maybe. But it's how do you change that shallow belief?
Mm. Well, I think you still are thinking that they caused it.
Yeah.
And
it's not like
I caused it, you know. It's just that,
cause and effect.
Yeah, it's just that there's many causes and conditions that are coming together, and you know what, just there are many causes that create this life, and it just happens to be that one of them created that cause. But it's not like I did it. It just somewhere in the past, you know, zillions of lives, that did happen, but it wasn't this me. You know, it wasn't. It's not my personal responsibility in a way, you know. However, one way to deal with it is you can think that, you know, this life, okay, whatever that karma is, I'm finishing it. You know, it's not going to happen anymore. I mean, that's one way to deal with adversity, is that, you know, whatever karmic thing created that for this to happen, it's done now, you know. I have to live with it. It's done now. And I know that one of the things that's really helped me with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, when I was going through some difficulties and I was really upset about having been hurt, and he said, by people who had been mean to me, and he said, it wasn't to me personally, it was in teaching, and he said, your karma's finishing. He said, their karma's starting because they're being mean to you. And so immediately I was able to have compassion for those people. And I was okay. I mean, immediately I was okay, even though it had been like a few months, I was like, struggling to let go of it with thought training. But as soon as he said that, I could just feel the energy leaving my body, because immediately I could turn around and have compassion for them, you know, because oh my goodness, they're going to have to experience what I've just gone through, you know. And I like, that's with the bullying, isn't it?
Yes.
And so I just find that mind, that particular Ojong, very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
There's one example, and I think Words of My Perfect Teacher, like an Amarin.
Oh,
text,
yeah, that's a really good book, too.
Like a hunter and a deer, and they say, like, actually, you should have more compassion for the hunter because the karma they're getting from that.
Yeah,
aggression.
The same with the spider here.
Mm. And it's, for me, that doesn't feel natural. You know, you see the thing suffering, and you think, oh, well, it's that thing that you should have compassion for. But it's the person with aggression.
Mm-hmm. Richard, you were going to say something?
Well, yeah, I have a perspective on this which is quite heretical, maybe. But to me, there's an analogy here with we're born into a society which has the karma of colonial exploitation.
That's right.
Now, that is our responsibility,
yeah.
But it's not our creation.
That's right.
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 And to me, you know, my karma is just, I don't think, not necessarily not me, even me, that's created it. It's just that I happen to have inherited this karma, right? So it's my responsibility. And in fact, the person who's born with a disability should be applauded because of this karmic thing drifting around, and they're working it through.
Yeah.
So as long as they can do it skillfully,
mm-hmm.
they're doing the universe a favour because they've discharged that piece of karma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that's my way of...
Well, that's a good way to think about it.
I'd say karma not to be taken personally.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Don't take karma personally. And that's the thing I really notice about Lama Zopa Rinpoche. He never takes things personally. You know, bad things happen to him, he just goes, oh. I've never seen him like we get, you know, and or you know, and I've seen things happen, you know, and even when he lost his most treasured coral mala, you know, I saw just a tiny bit, you know, because he had it for a long time. Oh, I left it on the airplane, you know. But when Lama Yeshe died, he did say to me one time, I heard him say, he said, because I was just with him, and he just looked at me and he said, if I think about it, I just want to die, you know. So he was affected, of course, you know, when his closest friend and his guru died, you know, of course.
And when his mummy died, yeah. He was there when she died.
Yeah. So it's not that great beings don't have emotions and don't feel things. They're just not as destroyed by them as we are, you know. Yeah. Were you going to say, Pauline?
I was going to say, like, his holiness, he just works through his emotions,
mm-hmm.
and just lets go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they say like water off a duck's back.
He said, I'm human.
Mm-hmm.
I can cry.
Yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, is that helping any?
Yeah, definitely. Lots to mull over. It really is. I'm just trying to get past a really basic understanding of it, some of the nuances.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I listen to a lot of commentary and. From people of different backgrounds who may find that view really offensive.
Yeah.
So it's just...
Well, how would they describe it then?
I'm not sure. I don't
you mean not karma at all? Like
No, yeah. More of a... I don't know. I guess maybe that the responsibility wouldn't be placed with them to manage, I guess, in any situation. If you're a minority.
Yeah, well, the thing about it then is that the other route you can go with a disability though is you feel like a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about karma that's so nice is that if you really understand karma, there's no victims and there's no perpetrators. And that is such a huge deal. Because every culture is so caught up in he did this to me, you know, and I need reparations and I need this, you know. And I have an Australian friend and this thing about, you know, how badly the Aboriginals were treated. And he said, well, the Aboriginals that are being really treated now are the reincarnations of the white people who hurt, who were abusive to the Aboriginals, you know. So just things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and maybe the really terrible colonialists are some of the people who... experiencing the worst in deep dark Africa or something, you know, because colonialism is
hopefully
really
the
bad.
Same with the Native Americans.
Yes, exactly, you know. So the thing is, I think the main thing we need to know is that we don't know what's going on. You know? I mean, that's why the thing about not judging is just the best thing, you know, like refrain from judgment and just have compassion. You know?
That's what I was thinking when we were talking about your son. I mean, this is the way I've dealt with things with my daughter over the years. Because when I was a Catholic, I was very angry. So I was angry with God because I thought, well, it's God. God must have done it.
Yeah.
Why did God do it?
Yeah.
And why should he do it to her?
Yeah.
She hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
And why should he do it to me? I haven't done anything.
Yeah.
You know, but kind of getting over that and becoming a Buddhist, actually...
Yeah.
I can feel much more calm and spacious about it.
Yeah.
And just think, well, for some reason this has happened, and the only way I can deal with it is just by being as compassionate as I can be towards her.
Yeah.
Not let her walk over me, because that's not being kind either,
mm-hmm.
but just that.
Yeah. And towards yourself.
Yeah, and towards myself, yes. Yeah.
Mm.
And none of this kind of, well, it's your fault, you know, because that is just, I think there was a, I don't know if anybody remembers, but a few years ago, I can't remember who it was, but it was some footballer or some sports personality or something that said something about people with disabilities and said, oh, well, you know, it's their fault because it's karma. And that's such an... And everybody kind of flew up about it and was really angry and there's huge fuss and everything.
Mm.
But that's such an unskillful way of looking at it,
mm-hmm.
because that person also is a human.
That's right.
You know, so therefore there must be some positive karma there.
Yeah. Well, also, I think if you understand karma in a healthy way, that it empowers you to become a better person.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's like, well, I'm not going to do this one again. You know, so let's take care of other people, you know.
Yeah.
Let's take care of other people with disabilities, you know.
Yeah.
I think your point of saying we have to be skillful, I think, is very, very important.
Yeah.
Because we can read some books about karma and start to get a gross understanding,
yeah.
and then over time, hopefully, understand a bit more subtle understanding.
Mm.
But that doesn't give us permission to suddenly say to somebody, oh, yeah, you've got that because of past karma.
That's not our job,
is it? That's not our job.
Mm-mm.
And even within study groups, I say, I don't have the skill to even start thinking about answering that question.
Because we're not clairvoyant, are we? So
no.
We can't know.
And,
well,
you know, they say that karma is the hardest of all the Lam Rim, you know, of all the Buddha's teachings, karma is the hardest thing to understand. And only a Buddha can really see karma.
Yeah.
And so all we need to know is that, you know, we need to purify karmas that we don't want to have, you know, and don't create future karmas, you know. That's
and
all.
There's so many different kinds, because I did the Discovering Buddhism in Leeds. I taught there and it was took me 9 weeks to cover... That's just to cover the different versions of karma.
Of karma, wow.
It's just an intellectual talks. But, yeah, just incredible.
Mm.
And that really taught me, because I hadn't really studied it that much until I had to teach it.
It's so interesting
that
what damage could be done with a small understanding of a really complicated idea.
Yeah.
Which is a dangerous thing.
Yeah. Really, really interesting.
If you really want to study karma, Geshe Zopa's Lam Rim books are very, very good. And I think the third one, it's like a whole book on karma. You know, so if you really want to know about it and get the whole lowdown, you know, it's just Geshe Lundup Zopa, and they are, I think, they're Wisdom Publications. And he taught the Lam Rim over like 10 or 15 years or something. And they transcribed it all, and over the years it's been slowly turned into books. And so it's the most comprehensive English Lam Rim we have, because it's, what is it, 6 volumes?
I think there's a couple of them out there, but I don't know which ones. I didn't notice which ones.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
It's something I'd like to read.
Well, I ought to read it too. I've never read it.
Mm-hmm.
So, what were you going to say?
We discussed today, and also what we discussed yesterday, brings a quite an important point. Is that in whatever we learn and whatever we try to understand or try to interpret in our lives, it's really important not to be lazy and rely on a certain concept and try to replicate it and apply it across. We really, I think, what is particularly great about Buddhism is that is to try to see the situation as it is in that particular moment, because it is very complicated, and if you try to apply concept of karma or anything else across as black and white, it will destroy your life, or your thinking, or your understanding of things around you, because it's really, I think, what it teaches is to exercise that, not to be lazy in trying and see the situation every time in a new way, or anew, or apply the same concepts every time in a particular situation, and not just think, okay, if this is how even I feel Buddhism is, or I adopt, or I feel that's the way, or that's what the teachings say.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that that's exactly how it is in every single way. You cannot apply it, and I think that's what I'm hearing really from today and yesterday as well, is that, you know, not to be lazy and in trying to apply it every day in a to a particular situation, to everything that we experience.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, karma. Any more comments? Because earlier in the morning I said that it'd be nice to just share some of the ways that we can deal with anger. And if anybody wants to, personal experience or scriptural references or, you know, how I mean, Shantideva is a good one to turn to, but how best to deal with those situations that are so frustrating and anger and in a practical way, you know? Do you want to say something, Carl?
One practical way is tapping. But
that's really tapping.
Yep, really practical way. But as a general concept, people only... I work on the basis that people only get angry if they're hurting somewhere. So anger management doesn't work because it manages the anger and stops them acting out. But it doesn't get down to the wound that needs healing. Mm-hmm. And so really to deal with anger, you need to identify the wound and heal it.
Mm-hmm. How true. Mm. And how do you do that in therapy? Just talking to somebody about it?
Or with tapping or...
Yeah.
And the whole tool bag.
Mm. Do you want to share any more? Or you...
No.
Okay.
Well, unless people want to know more,
Well, I'd like to know more. I mean,
yes, I would love to know at that moment when I spoke and it's like that and I can't help it. How do I stop doing that?
Mm.
Because by the time I started tapping, it's too late. That's it, I've gone.
So it's noticing what's the build-up and finding out where to enter. Extreme example. Domestic violence situation where the guy said to me, his excuse was, she just winds me up, I can't help it, I just bang and I've gone. So I said, so where's the body? Because if you go like that, if you lose control, the other person ends up dead or badly maimed or sliced and diced or whatever, and there's blood everywhere. It's as bad as that. So at some level there is some control there which constrains him to just breaking her nose and blacking her eye rather than anything more serious. There's some level of constraint there. So it's finding that and building on that at that sort of level. But it's noticing a build-up.
Mm.
And usually something doesn't happen bang in isolation. If he does then and he catches you like that, then learn from it for next time. Yeah. But by and large, situations build up. And it's noticing, hang on, this is starting to escalate, this is getting to the point where I'm going to go. And let's interrupt that pattern.
So I think what you were mentioning in the morning is that, so your son's coming down, and right, if I remember it correctly, and you already know that you are going to, you are at the time when you snap, you are ready to snap.
On the other day, I picked him up because he was staying in his nana's home, and I picked him up to go to school because I was going to work.
Yeah.
I had to wait for him for 10 minutes, which made us late already, but then gets halfway to the metro, I forgot my scooter. That was it. Because I was already late for work, so I was stressed. And then he goes, I forgot my scooter, so I had to turn the car around, and I just went.
Mm.
It's that sort of thing. And it just came straight out of me mouth. And then afterwards I go, why did I do that?
Mm.
I dealt with that so badly, why did I do that? Was because I was late for work and just having to go back. And
it's a whole build-up, it's not just one thing.
Mm.
And it may be some like rehearsing that you know that he's going to come with something. So
I can probably do he's going to come with something.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's
if you work on the basis that he's going to come with something, so you need to get yourself in a calm place to begin with. And if he doesn't, wow, what a bonus that is.
How old is he now?
12.
Is there no, talking about the way things have been cut back so much, is there no outside help that you could access?
Or
because it can be really helpful,
You believe me, I have searched, I know, I have tried every organisation, and there's funding cuts.
Does he take medicine or anything for it?
That's another thing we're talking about. He did, but because his dad is totally against it, not having done any research or anything, just hearsay of a friend of a friend whose kid was like, it's on because of what on the wrong meds, but of course he doesn't listen to that type of thing. He doesn't want to take meds, so of course my child listens to his dad, and I don't want to take them, they make us feel ill and all this. So we're at the stage where he needs them, won't take them.
Do you have CAMs?
Yeah, it's through CAMs. But we can't do anything because he refuses to take.
And respite?
Yeah, he's not bad enough that they would offer that.
Oh, God,
to us.
Yeah, that's the usual thing.
So he goes
because that can be very helpful for that age, to be in another family and see what works. Adoption?
Believe me, I have thought about it.
It can be so hard when your child's like that. Must be really. I mean, it's just your only child.
Yeah, and as I said, because I'm a single parent, because his dad's useless. So it's always on me, and there's no sort of handing him off, going, right, I need to step back and just take 5 minutes. It's me, and that's a problem because I can go for so long, and it builds up and builds up and builds up, and then I just go, that's it.
Is there any
more
family? I know I keep telling you things which you must worry they don't exist. Any family therapy?
I've asked.
To work together.
I've asked. The only thing we could do was go privately.
See, the thing is, in London, you can still access these things. It's so sad.
Oh, believe me, I've tried everywhere.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. That's, again, why I need to find ways to deal with it and change myself as a person.
Well, you just need time out, it sounds like to me. You need some kind of breaks, you know.
Mm. You need more of these.
Yeah. How have you managed to get here, then, Amanda?
Because he's in between his sort of dad and his grandparents, because his dad just lives 2 streets away.
Yeah.
My dad just lived down the road.
What's he like with his dad?
He's not as bad with his dad, but he's still. But I think his dad sort of just lets him do what he wants, and he only has him 2 evenings a week for not very long. So. Doesn't really help the sort of issues I do. We're getting out of bed in the morning and getting to school, and I'm the one that deals with the bulk of.
But maybe one of the things that you know you can try and look at is to observe your day, or like to notice how your days are, and see where you can get those, you know, make some incremental changes to your day. So, for example, you know, if you have that situation, you know, with the car being late. Maybe you can try and start earlier so that you would.
Okay,
just an example.
This
might not. Or maybe something like a calming place where you can just before anything happens, you can just kind of like there are some kind of tokens or something that sometimes help calm down people, but you kind of associate with it, and then you know that. Okay, if I take it, or if I go there, or if I, like, I don't know, I just put my hand in the water. It's just, it's just something that distracts you and sort of switches the build-up or prevents that build-up. Something that would help.
The only person I'm hurting is myself, because I start shouting at him, he shouts back at me, and I come away and I feel like the worst parent ever. I feel so awful, and I'm like, why did I do that? And I know it's making him worse, and it's awful. It's just awful the way you come away feeling about yourself.
Now, see, work with this Tonglen practice sometimes. Mm-hmm. See if that helps. It might help, you know, especially for yourself. Would anybody else want to add to that? But really try that and sort of really forgive yourself, because it's you're in a really difficult situation, and to be down on yourself for it's. You know, maybe if you forgive yourself more, and really, you might have to really work at that, then it might lessen the stress and the tension around the fact that here we go again, you know. And so if you can kind of really take a little bit of time every day, you know, 5 minutes in the morning to just do that breathing exercise and just try to find that calm place. And if you can really get into the habit of doing that, I think over time it'll help, you know. You know, and I even thought maybe we should give her a really nice mala, you know, just a you know rosary, you know, just to wear around your wrist, you know, just to remind yourself, you know, you can do that, you know, just like she was saying, just some kind of
that actually might be a good idea, something like that too.
Yeah. So something, you know, just to sort of, and you know, remind yourself. Like we haven't done any mantra recitation. We haven't said a Mani Padme Hum, but a Mani Padme Hum is like the compassionate mantra. And if you could do some of that with the Tonglen practice, then it'll begin to create what she's saying, like that refuge inside yourself. It takes time, but you've still got quite a few more years with your son. So you know, if you can take time, and even you know, when I used to work an office job a long time ago for a while, you know, in my breaks, I had about an hour lunch, half hour for lunch. You know, I'd go find a park and I'd just sit and lie down and meditate and do Tonglen in the break time. You know. Just little things, like try to sort of integrate it, little fine ways to put it into your life. And I know it's all new to you now, and you might not be feeling much now, but over time it really does begin to calm the nervous system, you know, and maybe even do some of the tapping before, you know, and just try to find some of these tools. It does sound like the government's helping much. You know, does anyone want to add to that?
I think it's also the switching of self-judgment. And guilt.
Yeah.
Moving, those are very powerful words which just solidify into.
Yeah.
And it's that self talk, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when you're saying to yourself, I'm such a bad person, I'm such a bad mother, blah, 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 blah. You know, turn that round. Try and, I'm doing the best I can. So when you get that message, oh, I'm such a bad mother, well, yeah, I am doing the best I can. And, you know, this is difficult. Do you know what I mean? Just talk to that voice.
Yeah, because it's going to make it tighter.
It
you know, it's going to make it...
Change language.
That voice.
I'm not a bad mother. I'm the best mother I can be in these circumstances.
Yeah, you are, actually. You are.
Because you wouldn't be beating yourself up if you weren't a good mother.
Exactly.
But this is just, you don't feel so guilty. You just feel so guilty because you just think, I'm making everything worse.
Yeah.
I have to say that I think a lot of mothers scream and shout at their children. It's not just you.
Yeah.
No, really.
Yeah.
Is it? I don't know. I'm not a mother, but I've observed it.
Yeah, but I don't want to be.
Because they push you.
Parent.
No, it's hard.
And it's not helpful either.
No, it just
really
makes him shout
rubbish.
Back at me.
Makes
that's
it
not
worse,
the person I want him to be.
And he's only 12 now.
Yeah.
When he's 16.
Yeah.
He's going to be much bigger than you.
But he's any bigger than me now.
So you've got to, this has got to end.
Even try counting to 10 or something, you know.
Yeah, I don't have the time between that and the sport.
Yeah, no, I know.
Probably get to like 2
or
2.
Even if you got to 2, Amanda, it's
if you try just counting, even counting to 1, if you get to 1, that's better than naught. 2, you might get to 2, and then when it's time, you just don't know, because you've got to start somewhere, start where you are, and just...
And
catch that.
Take
a deep breath in.
Where do you put that?
Yeah.
If you spread your hand,
right.
Okay, and then it goes on just under your collarbone.
Yeah.
Okay.
I might be doing this tapping myself.
It's a good thing to do.
It takes in the where you were hitting there. It takes in those two pressure points there, plus. Two under the head of the collarbone, and one in the middle.
I was thinking, you know, it used to be, I used to start meditation sessions with tapping, so I thought maybe this next session we might do that, because it really helps to get your mind into meditation mode, too.
That could be a good one, actually, because I do go...
Right.
And
well,
I would have to learn how to
instead
do that,
of just
instead
that.
Of sort of
So as you're taking the breath in, just... And then one more for luck.
and that combined with having a little meditation practice.
Yeah.
Because once you start tapping, then you might have the space to remember that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to come back and tell us.
Yeah, we'll all be rooting for you.
Yeah, let's pray for her too.
Yeah,
we'll
do some Tonglen.
What's the prayer? Is it the 4 powers, where you talk about regrets.
Mm-hmm. The 4-pointed powers.
Yes, that what I found very useful.
Yeah, well, that's whenever you're trying to... That's the other thing you can do. Thank you, Keith. Maybe you want to explain that. I mean,
well, what I got out of it, I mean, I didn't have those circumstances at all, but I would get very frustrated either with politicians or, you know, it could be anything, drivers, And the guilt side also came in certain circumstances.
Mm.
And what was a complete eye-opener was to change the word guilt to regret.
Mm-hmm.
Because regret is just accepting something has happened,
mm-hmm.
not bad, good or bad, it's
mm-hmm.
just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make a commitment to try and not repeat that, but you can make that commitment for 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
To not repeat it for 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that minute, you can then rejoice. You can say, you know, I showed
mm-hmm.
regret
mm-hmm.
and I've not repeated it. And you can do that again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst thing is then say, I'm not going to do this for a month, depending on the circumstances. Because then you could find it does happen, because we're all human. And then you start unraveling.
It's better to say 2 minutes. Then.
It's better to say 2 minutes,
yeah.
Yes. So that was just personally, for general frustration
yeah.
for me.
Now that's a good
and
point, because the other thing you can do, since we've been talking about karma, is you can purify the karma that causes that for you to do that. And you can purify the karma between you and your son. And you can do that with the Tonglen practice.
Mm-hmm.
You can breathe into your heart. You can think, whatever it is, that's whatever karma is that's ripening here right now, I'm going to purify it with bodhicitta motivation. That makes it more powerful. And just imagine that all that karma you're sucking into your heart and it's dissolving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and do it for yourself and do it for your son. Because you can, because karma is all purifiable, so that, because if the karmic seed for that to happen gets purified, it's not going to happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and there's more complicated ways of doing that. But the four opponent powers are regretting that situation, regretting that karma, then doing something about it. Well, actually, the first of the four important powers is refuge in bodhicitta.
Mm-hmm.
So you remember the refuge, you're doing this with bodhicitta motivation, then you have a regret.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do something, which would be that Tonglen practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do the bit that, okay, you know, the next time, you know, what's his name? The next time he does, you know, I'm going to do my best. You can just say, I'm going to do my best, you know. But just putting that imprint in your mind and doing the Tonglen with it will begin to shift it, you know. Because right now what it is you have this fixed idea and you keep telling yourself, you know, I'm a bad mom, this, that, and the other. But if you change those concepts, and it gives your unconscious mind a break to begin entertaining a new vision, you know, a new karmic matrix between you and your son.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would really consider doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on with the what I was saying yesterday, that the conversations we have don't describe reality, they construct it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're
right.
Constructing a reality where I'm a bad mum.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So deconstruct
that. Change that conversation.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that, you know, replace guilty with regret.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, I found that very powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Very powerful.
That was one of the first things I liked about Buddhism, you know.
Mm.
Yes,
yeah.
It was that and take
yeah.
personal responsibility. That
mm-hmm.
was the two.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And you can change it. You can change
it. Yeah, you can change karma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
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 Why just
Oh, does it?
Yeah, it clearly does.
Now it's back. Now it's in Lisa's. Maybe it's this one.
It's the other one.
This one.
Yeah.
This one now.
Yeah.
The other thing that just pops in my head is motivation.
Yeah.
Don't tell Daniel it was me.
Because I'm sure your motivation at the time wasn't to be angry to your son.
Mm-mm.
And I think that's an important thing to reflect on
mm-hmm.
afterwards,
mm.
is that was not what you
mm.
were motivated to do.
Mm.
And again, that changes the energy just that little bit.
Mm. It does.
And you just keep on, and it's the same reinforcing, you're not a bad mother or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
it's that motivation. You
know?
Mm. Motivation as a mother is loving kindness and concern
mm-hmm.
and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think one of the most instructive things we can do for ourselves is exactly what Carl's saying. What are the stories that we tell ourselves about who we are? And we can go on that for a long time. and really think about all those stories, you know, because there's, because usually we take on what other, what we hear other people say about us as well, you know, and we construct these stories, and they're just stories, you know, and so we need to recreate new stories about ourselves. And once you make a list of those stories, you can do tunneling with those stories. Just completely dissolve those stories. And what's really important, though, is this idea of refuge, however you feel it, you know, that that there's something greater than myself that's helping me, you know. And it's, and the refuge, I know I keep just making it simple with the Buddha, but it's also the Dharma, it's also the Sangha. You know, now you have all these people that care about you, and they're going to keep praying for you. And so you can feel that support, you know, you're not all alone, even though you may never see these people again. They're not going to forget about you, because these are all very compassionate people. And just feel that there is this support. I'm not alone. You know, the Buddha's there, you know. And just allow yourself to deconstruct that other thing about I'm alone, I'm a single mom, it's so tough, you know. And I mean, that might be true, but it's not the only part, you know. So it might be helpful to just sit down and really make a list of those, all of us, you know, make a list of those stories, you know.
I think that would be very helpful.
Yeah.
Well, one of these days you might write all the stories up and make a bestseller.
Yeah.
Yeah. If she has time.
Do you work full time?
No, I just work part time.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good,
that's,
at least.
Enough with him.
That's great. And the other thing, you know, they always say it's good to like have something you do for yourself, like go swimming or I don't know what you do, you know.
Yeah, I do. I've started going to the gym.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That really helps.
And learning Spanish still. So I do make time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just remember too, you know, that anger is very related to the liver.
Mm-hmm.
So doing this Qigong, that's why we did the Shu this morning, you know. The Qigong really helps. And think about, you know, the foods that help your liver. You know, you can look it up, but green things help your liver. Not eating such fatty foods, not fried foods. You know, of course, less alcohol. And just, because I know I had a really bad case of hepatitis in India, so I've dealt with a bad liver all my life, you know. And just that kind of twisting exercise that, that loosens up the liver, because it's that constriction, and you can feel it. Urgh! You know, that's, you know, I mean, just doing that immediately just crushes that liver, which comes out in anger, you know. So just kind of, you know, letting that. And do those kinds of things, lying down before you go to sleep. Just, you know, we're I think tonight we might do another breathing exercise. I mentioned it slightly here, you know. You breathe in the green light into the liver. And as you breathe in kindness for yourself. And as you breathe out, you let go of that anger. And just lulling yourself to sleep with stuff like that. And over time, these things, they do change. So it's good to work with the body, too.
That's the liver point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, the start of the liver meridian.
Mm. Yeah, we've learned, we're so grateful to the Chinese medicine that's come to the West. You know, Chinese medicine is so profound. You know, and it's thousands of years old. Yeah. So, anything else we want to talk about? Done for the day? Feel done? Pardon? Something?
What about other people being angry at us?
How do we deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
I've experienced a lot of that in my life. Mm. But that's it's the same with you, you know. I mean, how do you not get angry when someone's angry at you?
Mm.
You know, how do you not respond? Well, we go back to Carl, Tab. You know.
Choice.
You're right.
Yeah, the main thing is to the hardest for me, you know, because I think one of the reasons I do these Qigong and these body exercises is if I can remember to breathe, if I can remember like feeling my feet on the ground, and then, because I might not remember to tap anything like that, but if I just remember to breathe and then think as best I can, you know, not respond, you know. It's really hard, you know, and I know Shanti Deva says, if you can't offer the victory, just become like a rock, you know. and just try to say, you know, if they're trying to, you know, have an argument, then you just say, thank you very much, we'll talk about it another time. But if it's someone who's got a long time resentment towards you, that's different, that's something that goes on and on and on, then I think Tan Lin's the best thing. Mm. You know, you just breathe in that person's resentment for you and give them love and give them, you know, whatever it is, you know. And then after you've done that for a while, it's actually interesting. The karma does shift enough for you to go there and talk to that person without them maybe being so angry. You might be able to have a door opening. I'd like to be able to talk about this situation between us. But I would wait until I did a lot of Tan Lin, because it does shift. I mean, it does work. You know. Does anyone else want to share about that? Just to do with, and yeah. in all as much as you can, from your side, have compassion. You know, work with it. We have to do it over and over and over again. You know, compassion with that person, because they're just driving themselves more and more and more into a dark state. You know,
but it's not the problem of you in that sense. It's their problem.
Exactly.
It's their problem, and that's where giving the compassion to them from yourself,
mm-hmm.
you can change your mind in that way.
Mm-hmm. And also doing some Tan Lin. If you know you have to go see that person, and then you have a good feeling they're going to get angry at you, well, in the car on the way over there, or before, you know, sit and do some Tan Lin with that person. So then it's like the pathways for your brain are already there. So that then when that actually happens, you can take a breath and go, right, I feel compassion for this person. Right? But we have to rehearse. We have to practice.
But I guess we're very good at the what ifs.
Yeah.
That's the other route we tend to take.
Yeah.
Where we try and predict what the mm-hmm. person's going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, in an ex-relationship, I took the route of being silent.
When the person's angry.
When the person's angry. Mm-hmm. And that actually escalated.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
But it was my only form of defense.
Yeah.
I now understand a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have just said, we can't discuss. As you said, you can't mm-hmm. argue with a person who's angry.
Yeah, but he's sure is easy to.
Because
we kind of go crazy ourselves.
Because mm-hmm. then you get this tit for tat, and all that happens is it just escalates even further.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really diffusing the situation, but there will be different types of diffusing depending on
mm-hmm.
the circumstances, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes we'll get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also when I started reading the Buddhist books and hearing the teachings, is that this acceptance that we've all been through it,
mm-hmm.
either in this life or past lives,
mm-hmm.
we've all experienced the same
mm-hmm.
unhappiness, whatever has triggered the anger
mm-hmm.
from the other person, which we maybe just be the trigger, not the actual
mm-hmm.
what created the original
That's
anger.
Right.
And that helped me diffuse a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
either blaming myself
mm-hmm.
or wanting to fight back a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a combination of things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really just changing that mindset that made a really big difference.
Well, I think one of the, I can't remember if it's the fourth or the fifth of the eight verses for training the mind, you know, when someone treats me anger with abuse, insult, and so on, I'll accept the defeat
mm-hmm.
and offer the victory. So, you know, you might not think it's true, but in that moment when they're angry, you can agree with them. You're right. I'm a total jerk. You know, I mean, it's good practice.
It's hard to do, but
it does work. You know, and then,
yeah.
and then they are completely subdued. And then, you know, and I know for me, part of it is like, I want to get to the truth of it, you know. I mean, that's not really
yeah.
true. I'm not really a jerk. So I have to explain, you know. Well, actually, this, and, you know, it's not. And usually, if you try to explain to somebody why they're angry, you know, try to excuse yourself, they just get so much more angry. You know, and I used to be guilty of that all the time. You know, I try to, like, let's be rational
yeah.
here. You know, this is totally irrational what you're doing. And, boy, that doesn't work.
I mean, my policy, whenever has a complaint about me. It doesn't
yeah.
happen very often, actually.
Yeah. Oh,
my,
yeah.
right, my first policy, the first thing I do is I apologise.
Yeah,
right
exactly.
Now, whether or not I did anything wrong is irrelevant.
Exactly.
I may be completely impeccable, but nonetheless, I did something. Nonetheless, I did something which caused them distress.
That's right.
And I don't want to cause them distress, so
yeah.
I apologise.
Right away.
That accidentally, I may have done something that harmed you. In fact, there's a practice in the Theravada Sangha where, as a regular ritual, almost, they apologise to all the rest of the community for whatever they may have done, knowingly or undoing, that's caused some distress to someone. And that's the first thing to do, is you apologise. And this, of course, as soon as you apologise, that immediately diffuses it.
Yeah.
And before you know where they are, they suddenly start kind of, they're half of it.
Yeah.
Right? And whereas if you defend yourself, it's just...
No, that's completely the wrong thing to do. You know? It's the most natural thing to do, but it's just like the most unskillful thing is... I didn't mean to. That's not good enough. You have to
just
say,
apologize.
I'm really sorry.
I'm just so sorry.
You know?
Sorry.
And that
so
doesn't even
sorry.
Work sometimes.
Yeah.
I've seen Rinpoche, he often will do that.
Yeah.
If people are getting a bit leery with him. But
well,
he just looks like so surprised.
Yeah.
And that puts people like, immediately.
Yeah.
Well, I asked him once, in Bulgaria, I said, Rinpoche, how can, is there a way of stopping the dogs barking? You know what they're like at night? Oh my God, they just start. When you've all gone to bed, they start. And hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you go to the window. Maybe it's one of the moves.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about them and you move your hands down sharply.
Mm-hmm.
3 times. So I used to try it.
Did they stop?
Bloody doesn't stop anything. But I have done it in Brixton Post Office, which can be any moment.
Like dogs.
Not dogs, but people.
Yeah.
They all, because it's so busy and they're so slow on purpose, I think, because they're so overworked and there's not enough of them. And so I've done it quite a few times.
Mm.
And it worked. People calm down.
Mm.
They might think I'm a bit bonkers.
That's probably because they're scared of you.
No, I mean someone way ahead of me. I'm not involved.
Okay.
And I'll just do it. And
then, but there's probably a ripple effect.
Yeah. And it seems to work a few times. It didn't work on the dogs, though.
The dogs just need to use earplugs.
Oh, that's so... Oh, God. Yeah. But it's like they stop for a minute and then they all start again.
Yeah.
Well, I think in the situation where, you know, you're in a relationship with someone who gets angry at you quite a bit, you can practice saying, I'm sorry. You know, you can do it, Richard's saying, you know, you can practice apologizing.
Yeah.
You know, you can imagine that person, you can practice apologizing. And so then when the actual time comes, you know, you've already put those imprints in your brain, you know, of, okay, I'm sorry, you know.
I think it depends on whether it's real violence or not.
Yeah.
Because I grew up with a mother who used a stick.
Yeah.
And she would always say sorry afterwards. And like domestic violence, I've worked with.
I was thinking,
domestic violence as well.
Somebody who's abusing power, typically man against woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman is apologising all the time anyway.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It either doesn't make any difference or it escalates things. Mm-hmm. It, because it's
really?
Just another aspect of being subservient and of being controlled.
Yeah.
So...
What do they do? Just leave, run away? What does
no,
they
strong enough.
Eventually. And some of them don't, some of them die.
I know, it's hard to leave. You know?
And a lot that leave end up in an equally abusive relationship.
Yeah.
So it's less common for them to leave and then get into a non-abusive
relationship.
Yeah,
because they have to heal themselves that causes them to be attracted to an abusive person. Yeah.
Or to be attractive to somebody who needs to control.
I mean, for me, like, I don't know how skillful, like, for example, these 8 verses would be with somebody with that kind of background. Like, it's the first thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for some people that I've worked with, like, it's a really big step for them to be able to acknowledge, actually, I've got a right to be angry, or maybe in that circumstances, I was a victim. So I don't know. Like, for me, I would be okay using these verses for myself, agency, you know, as a Buddhist, whatever. But maybe towards others, it would be a totally different...
No, you can't expect them to.
Yeah, not at all.
No, not at all. You can't expect anybody else to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's very different.
Yeah, it's only about what I can do, you know.
Yeah.
That's what Shantideva says about leather on your feet.
Yeah.
It's your way of reacting. Mm-hmm. You have to change yourself, because you can't change everybody else.
You can't change anybody else.
All you can do is take responsibility for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know so many people... in relationships think they can change their partner.
Oh,
it's just,
nobody.
I mean, it's just so silly, you know. Especially when you're young, you think that, because you don't know any better, you know. But I've thought it'd be so nice if in, you know, I don't know what you call it here, we call it high school in the US, but you know, when you're about 15, if you could get a pop psychology class, just to know, you know, how to recognize abusive behaviors and what's narcissistic and what's this and what's that, so that you could save the grief of, you know, letting a pretty face bring you into a ridiculous relationship, you know? Like, what are the signs of someone that you don't want to be in a relationship with? Because we have no idea when we're 18 years old. And we're not told, and it would be such an easy thing to teach in school, you know?
I think they're starting to do it, aren't they?
Yeah.
We have the social and community relationship, yeah. But not enough.
Because it's such a source of suffering. And also, just even the NHS would be in much better shape if, you know, but I'll just tell one story about Lama Zopa, and we might stop. It was about 10 years ago, 12 years ago. He likes to watch Oprah Winfrey sometimes, you know. Well, Lama Zopa likes to watch TV to see what's going on. And it was all about forgiveness and asking people to forgive. And so he lives in a house at the time. There's maybe 6 people living in his house in California. And they hardly ever get along, monks and nuns, especially nuns, very difficult to get along with each other. And there's a lot of strife, disharmony. And so Rinpoche sat everybody down and wanted, and he, first, the first thing he did was he apologized to all of them. Because this is what he saw on Oprah. And he wanted everybody to apologize. That's where he learned about this, was from Oprah.
Oh, right.
And because I don't think that's part of Tibetan culture at all, you know. Especially a Rinpoche, you know. So he went around and apologized to every single person. And there must have been 6 of them. A friend of mine was there at the time. And he wanted each one of them to do the same. And 2 of them couldn't do it. They just could not apologize.
Oh, wow. I think I would have cried in front of him if I'd thought he was like thinking that.
And he told me, and I was told that story, and then not long after that, we were at a teaching, and I was leading the chert, the puja, you know, the Lama Chopa puja, I was a nun for quite a few years, and I didn't want to get ordained. It wasn't my choice. Lama Zopa told me I ought to do it. And I think it was the day there was an ordination happening, and I must have been kind of sitting there, kind of, you know, like, and so and then we did the Lama Chopa afterwards, because I was sitting, you know, if you're leading, you're sitting right next to him, and he got off the phone, and he looked at me, and he said, "I'm so sorry if I've hurt you," and I just about burst into tears, you know, from Rinpoche say that to me, you know, because he must have seen that I was like, "Oh no, God, why am I done?" You know. And, but anyway, so I just thought that was, didn't mean to tell the part about me, but just a bit about going around the room and him starting to, you know, to get everybody to apologize. It was something that he learned, thought it was a good thing, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, every year until a few years ago, I used to go on this retreat with Bernie Glassman.
Oh, he's so great.
Yeah, sadly he's passed away now, and, it's held at, but Auschwitz and Birkenau, mainly at Birkenau. And you get quite a lot of Germans coming on the retreat, and they're always so sad about their, you know, the generational connection and their culture, even though they might have been not born in, you know, they're not always Buddhist, even though it's run by the Zen Buddhists. And he would always get, you know, because we'd have these discussion groups every morning at 7 o'clock, but they're with a facilitator, and they're very small groups, and you have a talking stick, and so you're only allowed to speak, but some people would get angry with them, but then he would bring up the fact that you should all apologize to each other, because you don't know what you've done to each other in previous lives, or even in this life, but coincidentally, or something. And because it is quite easy, isn't it, to sit there and think, look what they did. But they didn't do anything.
No.
And maybe, I always used to think, because I always wanted to have a child when I was young, and I never had one. And when I became Buddhist, I always used to think, it made sense. Some quite bad things have happened to me in my life before I was a nun. And I would say, I understand now. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to think maybe my interest in going to Auschwitz is because I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was a god.
Mm-hmm.
hurt children, so I couldn't have any. I don't know, but it doesn't always work for everybody, but it did definitely help me. Because I was also attacked when I was a small child.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to terms with all of those by saying to myself, you know, I mean it, realistically. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think I might have been in a safe asylum by now.
By understanding you created the cause, that helped you forgive.
By understanding it, it really has helped. I'm not saying it helps everybody, but it certainly helped me. But I wish I'd known about Tonglen and things like that when I was like 10, 11, when my mother was killed.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. Oh, poor thing. She never could understand me. She said I was too rebellious.
Mm.
I don't know where she got that from. But
she was just a strong person. That's
it's good. Hard, isn't it? It's hard.
Yeah, being
but
a
now
parent.
I look back at that and think, oh, poor thing. Because
mm-hmm.
she must have thought, oh, bloody child. I adopted this little thing who was so sweet and look what she's turned into.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those kind of...
Yeah.
If you can accept it,
mm.
it's so healing.
Mm.
Well, that's my story
mm.
anyway. I found accepting that I might be... Oh, that I did. That's all I've only got faith because that's what the lamas teach us.
Mm.
I don't know. Do I? I don't know
mm.
if I've had a previous life. Can't remember.
Mm.
Anyway, sorry, that's
no, don't be sorry. That's
thing about
thank you.
Why I forgive myself sometimes.
Yeah.
I definitely don't forgive anybody else. No, I do. I don't have grudges.
Well, there's that Native American saying, you know, I'll never judge another man until I've walked a mile in his moccasins.
Absolutely.
I love that one.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And never judge
another person until I've walked a mile in their moccasins.
Because we're
shoes.
So quick, aren't we, to judge? Because when we just did this retreat with Paula, it was just it was silent, and I was just putting the breakfast things away when the cornflakes fell off. As I've already thrown the yogurt on the floor. So this retreat. It fell off and the lid came off and they were everywhere. So Andy and I were bending down to get it and then I got up and cracked my head on the, you know, the shelf with the mugs.
Yeah.
So we burst into hysterics and this one guy who's on our retreat, he rushed into the kitchen. You're breaking the silence. As I'm like, and we were just, because it wasn't funny really, but it was quite hysterical because I really clogged my head and she couldn't stop laughing. We're trying to brush up the cornflakes. So, and it's somebody who didn't, anyway, I won't say who.
Anyway,
they
couldn't keep silence either. Yeah.
But that's not necessary. But it was quite interesting seeing how he was during the retreat and how quick to judge. So we're all guilty of that.
Mm.
But that was quite hilarious. Mm. It's pretty it wasn't filmed because it was quite funny.
Yeah, we have to really beware of Nazi behaviour in Buddhism. It
yeah.
can be there, you know.
Because sometimes I was, like one day I went out because I could, one of my, someone who was a friend was very, very upset by Lama Yeshe. Not by Lama Yeshe. She wasn't upset by Lama Yeshe, but something clicked and so I went out and she went out and we were talking and someone who works here said, you're not supposed to be out here, you're not supposed to be talking.
Mm.
And I said, well, actually,
it's really important.
Yeah.
But you see, it's quick to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate that.
Rules
yeah,
are
so
just,
do I.
I do too. You know, rules are just guidelines. We have to have our own wisdom, know when to break the rules, you know.
But I was very well behaved because I didn't say,
yeah.
But I could have done. Yeah, you really have to watch out.
Yeah, and don't
God.
Be afraid to pat yourself on the back. You know, there's a difference between like inflated pride and just a self-satisfied. Oh, I did it! I did it! That's a really good. I mean, it's really helpful to rejoice. You know, rejoice in your progress, and don't think that that's being egotistical, because it really helps us to move along when we. Because we're come from such a culture that's so eager to put everybody down, you know. And we're so eager to put ourselves down. And so we make just a tiny little progress, you know, just one little thing, you know. Even if it just means we sat in meditation without our mind being bananas, you know. Let's celebrate, you know. So.
But the key is not to get attached to rejoicing.
Yeah.
It's just in the moment. And I think it's fantastic. When I first heard the phrase rejoice, I thought, wow, you know, that really sums it up.
Yeah.
And we should, as you said, we should do that because we knock each other
yeah. ourselves all the time.
Rupa Rinpoche used to tell me all the time, he said, in fact, now in the FPMT, when we do the rejoicing practice, we always start with our own merits, yeah. don't we? Rejoice in your own. Rejoice in your own goodness. Rejoice, you know, what a great mom I am. I'm taking care of him, you know. Yeah.
Oh, I just picked up there's a medicine Buddha, and I just, while we were waiting to start the exercise, at the back, there's a whole section on rejoicing, which I hadn't seen before in Medicine Buddha.
Mm.
It's an addition
maybe it's
to
a new
the...
one or something.
And it's so nice.
Yeah.
You go through...
Oh, well, maybe bring it in the...
Yeah, put it in the... I put it in there.
Put it in there and maybe read it at the beginning
really
of the
nice.
Next session.
It's really
good
nice.
To do that. Would you do that?
Yeah, I hope it doesn't take too long. Oh, I don't think it'll take long.
No,
well,
we
pages.
Should stop now. Because I think maybe, you know, for us anyway, an hour is too long to meditate. So it's 5 to 5. Let's take a break until about, let's give ourselves a nice, 20-25 minute break? Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start about 5:20 to 6. And we'll start with her reading the rejoicing. And then I thought I might do another, or maybe we'll do the healing one tonight. Because really all there is for us to do is just keep continuing to do the Tonglen practice. And I hope you're happy to do that.
Yeah.
And you notice I keep varying it, you know.
Yes.
There's all different ways. Just to let you know that, you know, one thing that I feel really important about meditation is it's creative. You know, you can design it however you want. Every day, I mean, not if you have a sadhana. But this kind of thing, you know. I mean, you can tailor it to your particular situation that day. You know, if you need to do more work on yourself, more work on yourself. If you need to do more work on your mom, and more work on your mom, you know, whatever, you know. So it's good to see that it's we can play with it. It should be playful, not just, well, serious, you know. I have a friend who's she's now a therapist, but she's not much older than Beth, and she talks about one of the, you know, diseases that we can have, psychological diseases, is serious Buddhist syndrome.
It's a furrowed brow symptom.
Yeah, well, I have that big time. But,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's just people that are too tight, you know, like that thing of you can't talk now, you know, that's serious Buddhist syndrome, you know.
Can I just tell you one quick
yeah,
story about Tonglen?
Yeah.
What happened was, for those who... Oh, no, I think everybody's from here, on this retreat. No, sorry, you two aren't. From Australia or New Zealand. And, there's this place where bands play called Milton Keynes. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's like a bowl. Anyway, my two nieces, they for their birthday, they wanted to go to see Robbie Williams.
Oh, yeah.
You might not know who it is.
No, I know
so
who Robbie
I
Williams
said,
is.
Oh, well, I can take them, because I thought it would be fun, right? So this was about 5 years ago. So anyway, I went, and there's a point where everybody has their lighters and they're doing angels, you know?
Yeah.
And so what I decided, we were all standing up, so I thought, right, I'm going to do Tonglen. But there was a lot of people there. And it was a big mistake.
That's very
embarrassing. I was doing it right. I was really, really concentrating, and I actually fell backwards. And they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm just sitting down." Because you don't sit down in the middle of angels, do you? When you're... I was like, "Oh my God, it really worked!"
Yeah.
So ambitious.
Yeah, there was about 100,000. No, I don't know, 50,000 people or something. I don't know.
To the end of the song.
I was like, I was just like. Really, it just knocked me back. But luckily, we were already on those. You know those chairs you take when you're a bit older and you go to a concert that's outside?
Yeah.
But luckily, I was on that, and they were like, "Auntie, what are you doing?" I just thought I'd sit down for a minute. My knees. I would say my knees. But I just thought, it does work, you see.
Yeah,
it
can be very powerful.
Yeah.
And Robbie was
so be careful what you do. Oh, dear. Oh.
That's great.
I do it on the bus, though. Do you do it on public transport?
Yeah, you can do it anywhere.
Because some people are really suffering when they get on London. I don't know about other places.
Or the tube, or the train, or anywhere, you know.
Because it's always like, the people who can afford it go on the tube, and the poor people who are on the, you know, go on the bus. And this is only, I mean, I'm generalising.
Yeah.
And, and they always want to sit next to me.
Okay, yeah, because you're in your robes.
And they go, you know, telling me.
Don't they want to tell you all their stories?
They always want to tell me all their stories.
Yeah. And I'm trying to do my prayers on the bus. Because I am a bit late, you know. Does anybody else do their prayers on the bus?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. I do the tapping on the bus.
Next time I go, then they won't want to sit next. Yeah, yeah, because you start tapping.
Yeah, then you have a clear.
Well, you could get the whole bus doing it.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, you must really, you're more likely to get people talking on the bus than you are on the tube.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
Tube.
And not only that, they're bringing in so you can use your phone on the tube. You can now use the internet.
Yeah.
Now they're going to bring the. So you can talk on the phone.
Oh, no.
I hope it doesn't work.
Talk to their GP.
Can you imagine if everybody starts shouting above that noise? Lord love. And they'll have their headphones in, won't they, Jed, as
yourself.
Well? They'll have their headphones in and they'll be talking on their. Oh, dear.
Oh, well. Okay, well, let's come back at 5:25 and we'll do a short meditation before dinner. And we need to dedicate, though, so who wants to dedicate? How about Zed? Do you mind dedicating Zed?
So just to dedicate this discussion so we can find ways to work skillfully with anger and realize that there's